This is Journeys of Empowerment, more than a podcast. It's a circle of belonging, where every story becomes a turning point. I'm Michiel Suitjitrijd. Here, we don't just share experiences. We pause, reflect, and realign with what truly matters. Before we dive in, a word of gratitude to our very first believer and sponsor, Neotopia. We've all seen it. New processes, detailed training, tighter KPIs, yet somehow, the real shift never takes root. Because transformation doesn't start in the system. It starts in the human being. Neotopia understands that lasting change isn't about control, but about awareness. In their awareness workshop, you'll explore why strong processes still break down in execution, why learning fades when it's not embodied, and how to build teams that take ownership, not just orders. Change that drains people won't last. But change that awakens behavior, that's what moves everyone forward. Ready to lead differently and from awareness? Visit neotopia.nl. What if joy never meant to be postponed? What if it's not a reward for arriving somewhere, but a quiet companion that's been waiting for all of us along? In this episode, I sit down with Lara Ferreira, founder of Mindful Experiences, a platform helping individuals, organizations rediscover balance, purpose, and joy through mindfulness, embodiment, and conscious microdosing. After more than a decade in global corporate roles across Latin and Europe, burnout asked her to stop, listen, and realign. Her story is one of unbecoming, of shedding the roles and beliefs that no longer fit, and learning to live from presence rather than performance. We explored what it means to find balance through awareness, how the body signals when it's time to change, and why joy is not a destination, but a daily practice of remembering what truly matters. As Lara shared, be the star of your own live show and not a guest in others. And the truth that stayed with me, sometimes unbecoming is the bravest way to become whole. Let's begin. Lara, welcome to Journeys of Empowerment.
Thank you, Michiel.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much. Welcome in the studio.
Thank you. Lovely. Very cozy.
Lara, let's right away put ourselves to the challenge. Who are you becoming?
Wow. I believe I'm becoming my true self. Even still discovering who that is. I'm more like unbecoming who I'm not, in a way.
Mm. And when you say unbecoming, which parts do you want to unbecome?
I would say the personality traits that don't serve me so well, and that they were like not my natural self, and they were fruits of society, upbringing, expectations from the outside world and not really wishes from myself.
Yeah. Mm. Well, since we're here and it's Journeys of Empowerment and it's right away, we're going deep into who you are. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the unbecoming?
Yeah. Well, I'd say I've always been like a curious person, willing to explore life in a mindful way. Really enjoying each stage of life at the best that I can. Not when I look back, I wouldn't like to regret not living something, not having done something. Mm-hmm. So that's my natural me in a way. But I realized that for a long time, maybe almost a decade, I was following more like, I don't know, let's say society expectations, following a career that I've never really took the time to reflect whether and why I was doing that, up to the point where it was really uncomfortable. And then I decided, okay, I need to really figure out what it is that I want, as in my soul, and how to do that. So, yeah, I was really more operating from the more like masculine energy of a doer, of a chaser. Chaser of I don't know why, what exactly. But now I'm more like, what is it that I really want and I feel like makes sense and it's natural and brings me joy and happiness and not only, let's say, pays the bill.
Mm. Well, we'll dive in where that all comes from. And also, you mentioned something very important, the masculine part and where did that come from. But before we dive in, first, what are you doing right now?
Mm. I'm a founder of Mindful Experiences, which is a platform to support both individuals in living mindfully, experiencing life with joy and playfulness through events such as a women's circle, cacao ceremonies, even microdosing and other, let's say, experiences and dance as well. And also through guiding them in journeys of really finding them true purpose and how to balance both satisfaction and income. And also offer services for companies for them to offer mindful experiences for their employees as well.
And what do you offer them, for instance?
Both, let's say, trainings and workshops, but also outings and team building activities.
Beautiful. Yeah. And what is the change you would love to people to go through, or the transformation you're helping and guiding them?
What? One of the main, let's say, purpose that I have is to help people see or feel hopeful that it is possible to live life really fully and with joy along the way, because life, there will be always challenges. But if you believe that life is about suffering, that's what you're going to get. But if you change your beliefs to, like, whatever the situation is, I will do my best and have fun on the way, then that's how I want them to really see this as a way of living life. So while, let's say, they're chasing for their purpose or figuring out their career, their future, something that brings them more satisfaction and meaning, how to do that in a more playful and fun way as well. Not only do the hard work as in it's part of the suffering, that the journey is about suffering. No, it's also about joyful.
When you talk about suffering, do you see people sometimes maybe unconsciously choosing to suffer?
Yes. Almost every day I have interactions with people who are, they just say, yeah, it is what it is, or that's what I have to cope with it. And it's really strong limiting beliefs that many people have, yeah.
Where do you think that comes from?
Society, in a way. There's this saying, at least in Brazil, like, you have to choose if you want to be happy or have money. And that's really sad. Why not both?
So what I hear is that it's maybe part of the reason is societal expectations, obligations, opinions.
Yeah. Yeah, and this image of success.
Mm.
Being, making money and having assets instead of success equals happiness.
And when it comes to specifically that suffering part and also your urge to help them and so many people, and I do recognize it, unconsciously suffering or unconsciously self-sabotaging, sort of the outcome was the same and sort of treadmill with infinite success and then falling down and then success. So very fluctuating life. How are you helping them with that?
Well, I usually guide them on a journey to, first of all, really find balance, because if you are living out of fear, stress, not sleeping well, and your health is not in order, then it's really hard to believe things can get better or that you can change and transform yourself, your life, and your environment in a way. Then really finding what is this calling or this direction, what is it that moves them from within without those external influences or with the least external influences as possible, so they can really tune in with what really brings them joy and satisfaction, and how to match that into their daily life. And sometimes it can be through career change. Sometimes it can be through a better, more aligned work or job or role. And sometimes it's just a matter of adjusting the routine in a way that they have more energy givers to balance with the energy drainers in their daily life.
It sounds also like there's a big part in becoming aware of the of what we're unaware of, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And seeing our, discovering our patterns, and which are 9 out of 10 unconsciously somewhere stored, and keep repeating this sort of certain behavior that doesn't help you,
exactly,
and doesn't serve you.
Yes.
Is it always that people come in with a certain question, or what kind of questions do they come with?
Sometimes they come with a physical discomfort, for example, burned out, or really questioning about their future in the sense of life purpose in a way. So they felt like, yeah, I'm now in my mid-30s or in my 40s, I've accomplished so much, I've reached success, but still like something is missing. I wish I was as happy inside as it looks on paper. So yeah, there is something inside that is like lacking, and often they don't know what it is or how to express it in words. And then by having a conversation, they realize, yeah, actually, I really need to dig in and figure it out. What is it that is missing? What is it that I want? And then how to get there?
In Search for Meaning.
Mm-hmm.
That resonates, right? Mm-hmm. It's a book you've read, right?
Men's Search for Meaning,
yeah,
from
Men's
Viktor
Search
Frankl.
Yeah. What is something in that book, and it's not about literally, but what is what resonates with you?
Well, for me, it was really powerful where the character, the writer, he was going through a lot of challenges. Physical, mental, and everything was, and he had a clear, goal, but more like willingness to survive all of that because he really wanted to connect again with his family. So he, I don't know how, but he had this very strong force, inner force. That was his really like his clear purpose was to overcome all of those challenges to go back to their beloved ones. So for him, it was really clear, the motivation.
Yeah, I can imagine that resonates. For the audience to get to learn you a little bit more, why does it resonate for you personally?
Yeah, well, I was for more than 10 years searching for meaning. I was really unhappy at work, and I didn't know, like, I knew something was lacking. I couldn't name it directly what it was. So I went on a kind of 3 journeys in a way. One was really finding that balance in terms of health and wellness. The other was more on personal development, really getting to know me, my limiting beliefs, my personality, my childhood traumas and everything that was, really learning about me. And the third was more like on a spiritual path, connecting with the unknown and believing and generating trust and faith.
Sounds like an intensive process, right?
Yeah, it was. It was way less organized than I am explaining.
It's always, it's now like a structured 1, 2, 3,
exactly.
But it's not never a linear path, right?
Yes.
Let's dive into the health and well-being part. Are there certain changes in your lifestyle? What do you mean by really focusing on that? Let's say pillar.
Yeah, well, back then I was basically, I've always done like exercising because it's always been something I know is important and I like doing. So I was halfway there in a way, but I was just like going to the gym and then working 10, 12 hours a day. And then mostly in the evenings, just going for drinks with friends, for example. When I realized I was really stressed and it was jeopardizing my health, I decided to do more like positive changes. So I started practicing yoga right after work, and that was really good because first of all I had like a I really needed to leave work on time because I had an appointment, and I was gonna sleep after super like well and relaxed. So that was a very life-changing, and I still practice yoga up to now. I also started following Ayurveda as a lifestyle, so a mix of diet but also other practices, daily practices for self-care, which I still do it up to now as well. And then, yeah, experimenting other ways of other practices, different mm-hmm. sorts of massages, or even going more to the holistic treatments with energy work and, yeah.
The Ayurveda, can you, because for me it's interesting, that's for me relatively new, but can you unpack that a little bit?
What? Yeah, well, I'm not an expert, but Ayurveda is an Indian traditional ancient lifestyle, I would say. So some people call it medicine, but it's really how you can heal yourself or live a very healthy life by following some specific practices, from cleansing your tongue to drinking warm water, empty stomach in the morning, to really regulating your digestive system, being aware of your stool and your gut health. So it's really, there are a lot of practices that it will be individual per person because we are unique beings. But there are three, let's say, biotypes. And then each person has usually one that it's more often can be disbalanced. So there are things you should eat or things you shouldn't do or eat or drink to keep your gut health healthy and your overall lifestyle. So the time that you sleep, the type of oil that you can use in your skin. So everything combined brings you more balance. And so Ayurveda is all about balancing from inside out.
Are you and you live quite strict to it? Are
you applying it? I do my best. Yeah, like there are some. My morning routine is quite. I try to follow it the best I can, so that the rest of the day I can flow it with whatever comes. But then I know that at least I've done a good part of it already.
I'm a firm believer of morning routine, reading, breath work, walking, and doesn't matter if yesterday it was very late coming back from a SaaS community event and all energized and hyper me, as you can imagine, having a lot of energy, and then need to fall asleep. Normally I sleep very early, around about 9 o'clock, and then 9 o'clock to bed and 9:30 go to sleep. But and then 5 o'clock always without any alarm waking up, and then reading, and then breath work, and then walking. Those three things are essential. It's essential. And also the phone is out of the room, so no, it's out of my bedroom. And there's no phone until I'm going out for my walk for the podcast. So all those hours reading and investing in you personally, it's also, a lot of friends are asking me, Michiel, how does it work for you? And what do you get out of it? And well, at first, it's the first moment that you can decide what are you putting in your head, in your mind. Is it all about scrolling to a feed? Because there is something happening within us. Also, when it comes to breath, I noticed that my breath is more tensed when I start right away with my phone. 5 minutes on the phone or 5 minutes reading a book. It's a world of difference, right?
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, those are your non-negotiables.
Non-negotiable, yeah. Non-negotiable. And it's... And also my whole morning routine is built upon from 9 to 12. It's either learn, inspire, or create. So, and creating is, for instance, the podcast. So that's for me not work. Truly love it. What are for you essentials when it comes to the morning routine?
Well, it is the morning cleansing, so toilet, thong,
yeah,
the warm water as well. My Ayurvedic juice, it's the nutrition part, that it's my non-negotiable. It's some activity, sports activity, or going to the gym or cycling or walking. Yeah, and then I'm still struggling with doing it every day, let's say meditating.
Mm.
But being mindful, doing like my morning routine with listening to the music, the songs that I like, those are all meditative, even though I'm not seated with my eyes closed. So that's something I'm also trying to incorporate in my daily life, like having goals, but being also flexible and less strict.
Yeah.
Because then otherwise it's more feminine and yeah, less, harsh.
When it comes to meditation, I'm now 52, so it took me more than 5 decades to come to the conclusion that there is still one part, essential part in my daily routine missing, and it's meditation. And it's for a reason, right? Being silence with yourself. And what is for you an ideal process for meditation? What do you do?
Oh, well, if you read books, well, there are different also ways of meditating and philosophies behind it. I'm not an expert in meditation because that's something that I'm also still work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they say one of the best ways is just to sit down and close your eyes and breathe and just let it come. And whenever a thought comes, you just realize it and let go. And then slowly you create space. For me, that's also very challenging. So if I manage just to like speak with my guides, mm-hmm, and express gratitude, that's something that I feel like it's already on the way to calming down my mind or being in the present moment. I also do journaling, like things that I'm grateful for. So for me, it's a bit more about creating a ritual.
Yeah.
And this practice of taking 5 to 10 minutes every day. And I've been doing that for 2 years now. Not every day, but I do my best. Yeah.
And after 2 years, I'm really also from personal perspective very curious about this, and also really starting to think, Michiel, maybe it's really also for you. Mm-hmm. I always said that for everybody, but not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm now reading a book from Hitendra Watwa, Inner Mastery, Outer Impact. And it's a beautiful book. It's a PhD. He's very knowledgeable, but also very rich about stories. But one of them is self-realization. And it's all about mindfulness. It's all about meditation. It's all about going inward. And I think it's time. It's time to start learning that.
Mm.
Are you also using some sort of app or music or whatever to guide you?
Yeah, I've done a few, let's say, different meditation courses, and I've followed a different, those 21 days challenges. I try to be a little bit more go with the flow,
mm-hmm,
because I realize that it is already a challenge for me to do that. And if I make it as a very strict, then I create more kind of rejection instead
of tension.
Yeah, more tension. So I really try to go with the flow. And like today I did a walking meditation following like a guidance podcast as well. So I try to tune in with what I need and what matches with my schedule and my mood. And sometimes I do yoga nidra before going to bed to really calm down and go into the sleepy mode. It really depends, yeah.
So let's go a little bit more to aligning it with your personal journey.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that beautiful last name come from?
Oh, so Ferreira or Ferreira, it's a Portuguese surname. It comes from my father's father. Family side, which I haven't connected so much. I have a little bit more connection with the Italian side. Yeah.
So you're for the listener, you are half Italian, half Brazilian.
Yeah, I was born and grew up in Brazil, and I have also Italian heritage.
And what do you feel like, what do you feel as your identity?
It's interesting because often, because I'm living here now in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. and when I'm with Brazilians, or where, especially when I go back to Brazil, I feel like I don't belong there.
Mm.
And when I was there, I was like, yeah, I don't really belong here so much. So I was, that's why I've lived in different places, and I realized I feel the most comfortable place I feel, it's in the Netherlands, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah.
And why is that?
I see it as a good mix of some of my own personality traits, as in I've always been the one on time in Brazil, and Brazilian people are usually very late. I've always been the one like organized, planning, you know, like really more like, yeah, structured. And Brazilians are very much in the flow. And then I've lived, for example, in Sweden, which is very Nordic yes. culture. And then I didn't connect at all. It was too much. And then I feel like the Netherlands is a good balance of, you know, being on time, pragmatic in a good way. You give your word and you follow what your actions match your words in general. And but also it's like people here really like having fun and enjoying life and partying. So for me, it's really heartwarming to see people in their 70s, in their 80s, going to the public festivals and street parties and really enjoying life and having fun. So for me, this balance of being responsible, but enjoying life, it's what connects with me the most.
Belonging, right?
Yeah.
I never was aware about what belonging meant, and also how it feels to belong. Personally, not being excluded in my life, but on the other hand, starting to understand, hey, but where do we belong? And now I was in an event 3-4 weeks ago, it was Belonging by Redesign, organized by friends of mine and at Nijrode, and amazing speakers. And what I've noticed is that I felt a strange sort of feeling of belonging, which I couldn't pinpoint. And I was like, hey, where does this come from? Because there was a very diverse public. And but we all share a sort of common human experience when it comes to not feeling fully belonging somewhere. And that made me feel I belong there, because we share a sort of same sort of feeling of not fully belonging somewhere. And I was like, hey, this is interesting. You can feel a sense of belonging with people with who are different than I am. From the outer, but from the human experience, we are strongly, sort of gravitating to each other on the human level. That was interesting to see. And in a way, I think you're experiencing belonging is sort of in the same way. It's more here also very diverse, and in that diversity, you feel belonging.
Yeah. Yeah, I love like being around internationals.
Yeah,
because not only we share the same of we don't feel ourselves in our home country. That's why we are outside of it, and we also share this. I also really like getting to know other cultures and human behavior and understanding why they do what they do and how they do it. So that's since the first time I lived abroad 15 years ago in London, for me was like, wow, how amazing it is. They're like, because London is really a melting pot from the whole world. So for me, it was really nice to see a lot of different characteristics, cultures in the same place.
Yeah. And in Amsterdam is also the same. It's
exactly.
really, really diverse, luckily. You mentioned health and well-being and also personal development. And in personal development, you mentioned, and that's, it's so determining how we are behaving and navigating through life when it comes to limiting beliefs. What for you were limiting beliefs you started to unlearn or to unpack or to become aware of? And then first is awareness, right? And then, but what were limiting beliefs for you? Which were in the way? Or
The first one was when I realized I wasn't really happy at my work. And then I started questioning my career, my future, what to do next. My first limiting belief was, well, there's nothing else I can do because I don't know how to do anything else. I don't have any hobbies. I don't have any backup plan. Like, this is kind of my destiny, which is really the belief that I really want people to change if they have that one. So I started changing that by really working on me, like really mapping what are my strengths, what are my interests, exploring new things. So back then, like 11 years ago, I did a career transitioning coaching program. That was my first step into mapping myself and then mapping what would be possibilities. But not only after I faced burnout that I went on a deeper discovery and path. And then I really thought my other limiting belief was I don't have any hobbies. I don't know how to do anything. Like I'm bad in all of the other things. I just know how to be a marketeer and work in corporate. That was the second limiting belief. And the third was I'm not interesting. I have nothing like interesting because that's all I do. I just go to work and hang out. There was nothing else in my life that could be something interesting to share, to talk about. So that those three were my main limiting beliefs. And the way I changed them was by first the awareness that they were limiting beliefs, and second really actively searching for things that I was interested in and in doing those things. And then as a consequence, people were like, oh, that's so interesting. You did a massage course. That's tell me more. Or, oh, you're learning how to DJ. Wow, that's interesting. and then, my tattoos, for example, they also have a story behind. So eventually I realized, well, actually, I do have a lot of interests and I am interesting. I just didn't see it.
And for a listener, because it's, of course, you have, and I saw it in our pre-video call, I saw it coming by on your left and on your right wrist. What are the signs on your wrist?
My left side, I have the Om symbol, which is the Om is the universal sound, the first sound of the universe, the Om that people also practice when meditating or connecting with spirituality. And that for me represents my day side, my yogi, wellness, healthy lifestyle. And on my right wrist, I have a headset that represents for me music, my night side, my social life. I love dancing, I love music, I love connecting with people. So they balance themselves.
And one with bikes.
And I have another one in my foot that it's a bike that represents my cycling passion for cycling and passion for the Netherlands.
Welcome to the Netherlands with bike and cycling, right? What did you discover? What was most surprising in that whole going inward? And because we can talk for hours already, only on three limiting beliefs. We tend to go fast and then, it's really limiting beliefs, but it doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. It's not like, hey, I have three limiting beliefs. And then what did you discover about yourself? What was really surprising?
I think for me it was the connection of or learning the root causes of those limiting beliefs, that they come from childhood. Some are connected with childhood traumas. So being raised with a lot of being criticized, not criticized, but it's like it's never enough, not being praised. Mm-hmm. So that feeling of I have to do more, to be more, and to be better, and to behave. So a lot of, kind of some unconscious thoughts of following whatever it's expected instead of following what I want to do and being shaped by external pressure or expectations. So I think learning that my limiting beliefs were a consequence from those patterns or behaviors from growing up was the first really click and the starting point from changing, because I knew that they were not me, they were from outside, and then I can create or connect or unpack who is really inside of me.
Do you believe we can get rid of our, we really get rid of our limiting beliefs?
I believe so. I'm not sure, well, for sure it's not easy, and maybe it's like a long-term journey, but I do believe so, yeah. Over time, with a lot of work. Or I want to believe that's possible.
That's maybe also, but I don't have the answer. Yeah. I'm just also reflecting and think, well, some maybe limiting beliefs will somewhere be stored in you, yet you develop more, what I believe is you develop more space between stimulus and response, between and being aware is almost 75%, you know, because if you are aware and you're able to pause and reflect, and become aware of, hey, what is really driving my behavior or potential behavior or the feelings which ultimately leads to behavior. But I struggle with really believing if we can really get rid of it, because it comes from so deep. Yeah. It's not one time you heard not being enough in what sort of, in what form or whatever, but it's multiple times. And I've once read a book, and there was that growing up, we hear in our childhood, sometimes on television and wherever, so many messages about how you are expected to behave and to do and to perform, and to that it's a sort of program in our whole on brain level, so creating new neural pathways, neurons that fire. I think that's, in my belief, it will always be part of us, maybe, or it will be always be there, but you are have more space to be aware of it and to choose, okay, because can you really get rid of the inner critic?
Yeah, not fully, I believe. Not fully, not the inner critic, but some limiting beliefs, I believe we can.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah. Rewiring also, I think over the coming decades, psychedelics can also really help with that.
Yeah, there was interesting. I am very curious about where did you discover that, and how did it help you?
Well, after facing burnout, I decided I didn't want to go back to corporate, or at least not for now. But I still was missing like the answer to what is it that I want to do? What is my calling, my true purpose? So I went on a deeper, more, let's say, spiritual journey to find that answer. Because from the mind side, I had it all clear, mapped out, working with coaches. From the emotional side, also with psychologists and so on, I was like, okay, I understand everything. But now, still, there's something missing to really, put all the puzzle pieces together. That's when I came across microdosing psilocybin here in the Netherlands, which is a protocol that you follow with tiny dosages of psilocybin, the magic truffles, with an intention and with guidance and so on. And through microdosing, those answers started coming out from within. So psilocybin really helped me to remove those mental noises from my head, all of the judgments, the fears, the limiting beliefs. They were slowly fading out as if the clouds were like moving away. And that opened space for other answers to come from my heart or from my soul. It was a process. I've done a few cycles up to the point where for me it was like, okay, now this is the way, you know. So the direction started getting clear. And then one day I had a click that, okay, coaching, helping others who have this strong limiting belief that it's not possible to both be happy and successful at the same time. You've been through that journey, you can guide others in that sense as well. So it was really helpful for me, yeah.
Mm. And you're now also putting it into practice in your work situation. So you're helping, guiding. Can you tell me a little bit more, or tell us a little bit more about how does it work? Are you working in a group session? How does it work?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's important to see if the person is eligible for that. It is advised that the person is not under certain medication, including SSRIs. If the person's open for
What is SSRIs?
Antidepressants in general.
Yeah.
Or prescribed medication. So any sort of prescribed medications needed to check with the psychiatrist or with the doctor, because most of the times they both interact in our nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important to really understand. Even, for example, ADHD medication is also not advised to do both the microdosing and the ADHD.
No Ritalin and microdosing together.
Exactly, no. So first of all, it's really understanding if the person's eligible. Also, you cannot be pregnant. So there are other things to make an assessment. Then it's what's the purpose of that? What is the intention? Why you would combine microdosing with the, let's say, with the mentorship, with the coaching program? Usually I tell people, especially if the person is very rational, very critical, that really helps because it removes this mental noise that I mentioned before and it opens space for more inner, being more compassionate and open for new ideas, new perspectives that often our mind, which is always there to protect us, can also be very fearful, act out of fear and then not even give space for new possibilities. And when we are following a program like a coaching, usually you are seeking for change or transformation or improvement. And that means leaving comfort zone. And that's where the mind can be very, cannot be so friendly. And that's where also microdosing can really help because it promotes neuroplasticity,
yes,
which is a new pattern, thought patterns. And over time, because microdosing is a cycle that lasts between 4 and 8 weeks. So over this course of, let's say, 2 months, you are able to really create those new mindsets, new behaviors, and slowly you get there. Usually I connect with going to the gym. So if you go to the gym like every day properly, you will see results over 2-3 months time. And then I offer, as connected with my mentorship, with my program, microdosing guidance if it's helpful and the other person is open and eligible for that.
Do you one-on-one?
Yeah, because it's really individual, like the purpose, even the protocol, the dosage. So everything has to be very individual. Yeah.
And where do you do that? Where do you, is that at their home or what?
Well, microdosing is something the person would do in their daily life in the morning, empty stomach. The program is usually online. The only thing, they buy the truffles and then they follow the protocol. And then we keep connecting over especially the first weeks to really find the dosage. And then it becomes part of their routine. And I also do events where people can experiment the microdose in a safe environment.
Safe environment.
As a way to, see how the body connects with the substance, see how it works. The first time I tried truffles, I also had someone at my house to do like a proper ceremony because I was also afraid of what's going to happen if I take it.
Yeah, it's unknown, right?
Yeah.
And what happened for you? Can you vividly remember how it was for you, the first experience?
Yeah, I remember. Well, it was a kind of a low to medium dosage. It was not microdosing. It was around, I think, 3 grams of truffles. And I was, we were like meditating, really eyes closed and just looking inward with nice music. And I had a lot of nice reflections and realizations, both from my, growing up to my life journey, to what I wanted for my future. It was really a time to connect with me and have some me time to work on myself. And I remember, when the effect, let's say, was gone, I was like, okay, things make more sense now. Yeah.
So in a way, it helped you to give answer to the question, when you look back, what was missing in your childhood that you had to learn to cultivate as an as an adult, what would that be?
I think following my inner drive, acknowledging my needs and giving space for them instead of just being, let's say, a people pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
Or doing what I'm supposed to do instead of what I really want to do.
When people reach out to you, what do they expect? What kind of challenges are they experiencing and then come to you for help?
Most of the times, I guide expat international professionals who are facing something similar that I faced in the past, either burnt out and really questioning whether they should go back to their previous work or profession or do a bigger shift. Or they are successful, they are like okay with what they're doing. But when they think about their future, they feel like, I really don't feel like this is taking me somewhere meaningful. Something is missing. So either it's out of they seek more balance, health, work-life related, or they seek for meaning and building a more purposeful future. Usually those are the case.
Mm. Well, I speak to a lot of founders who are in that process, right? And a lot of times it's there is something missing. And when we pause and reflect and have a conversation, it's 9 out of 10 that it's about misalignment with what we truly feel deep inside and got buried under expectations, obligations, opinions, having a business, running a company, being busy. But if we pause and reflect and really be honest, why are we doing what we're doing? 9 out of 10, there's a misalignment.
Mm. Yeah, I relate to that. Mm. I used to relate to that, yeah.
When do we start to misalign? Where do you think that starts happening?
Mm. There is a theory from a philosopher around the 7-year cycle. Mm. And usually when we are around 28 years old is the first time we start questioning the future. So up to that point, we are just kind of doing, chasing and following the natural, let's say, course of life. And then when we are 28, that's the first time we start reflecting, what do I want next? And that can be either keep in the same route, professionally, personally, can be creating more roots. So that's when people start wishing for longer, like deeper connections and relationships and maybe properties, buying a house, so really rooting down. Or if there's a discomfort at that point, that's when also people start to reflect, okay, something is not right, it's not aligned, what would it be? And at least for me, that was really when I was 28, was when I started reflecting, okay, that's not what I want for my future, but then what it is. And then the next cycle, when you're 35, that comes again, this kind of reflection. And again, then either you keep in the journey because you feel like, yes, I feel I'm aligned, or you really start feeling more the discomfort of the misalignment.
Mm.
And that's also when sometimes people shift lives, career, divorce happens. So a lot happens usually around that 33, 35. And the third cycle of bigger change happens when you're 42, more or less. So usually people also, if they haven't changed careers in their mid-30s, sometimes they do that in their 40s. So there is this theory that there are those specific marks in life that it's an invitation for reflection. It doesn't mean people have to do change, but often when it happens, it's more or less in those milestones.
What were the biggest changes in your life in between 28 and 42?
Definitely 28 was when I started reflecting, okay, this career path, it's not the one for me for the long run, but I was completely lost on what else I would do. And 35 when I was when I had my burnout, so then was like, okay, this is the last drop that I needed to do a shift, even though I don't know where to yet, I have to figure it out. So let's see when 42 comes, what will happen?
Yes, and what is the when 35 and the burnout, if you even can talk about, if you even can speak about a learning, but if there is a learning, and if not, Michiel, just say, there is not a learning, but is there one specific important learning for you which came out of the burnout?
Oh, there's so many.
Ah.
One. Well, I really got to know who I really was not, in a way, based on the burnout. So that's when I went on this deeper journey of learning about myself, and I realized how much of a people pleaser I was. Everything that led me to burnout was were these personality traits that were not serving me. So people pleaser, not saying no, conflict avoidant. So everything I was aware only after burning out. And then really following more my inner drive instead of others' expectations. So being more respectful of my needs, my wishes. So I started saying no to invitations or people that were not really serving the direction I wanted to give my life. And I started making new connections, finding my tribe, exploring new things that I incorporated in my life, such as ecstatic dance, as we were saying.
Yeah. Can you tell a little bit more about ecstatic dance?
Yeah.
Because now I'm getting curious.
Yeah, so I think a lot of also what I learned a lot about this, who I am, was also looking back at my childhood and growing up. I realized I really liked dancing as a child, but more like free flow dancing, not really following specific like choreographies. And I'm a terrible dancer in the sense of following steps. I don't have the coordination. So that's why I feel like I'm more like Northern European than Brazilian, because I don't know how to dance properly. But then ecstatic dance is intuitive dancing. It's really letting your body drives you, your body guide you, your soul feel free to do whatever it's needed. It's an invitation for being free. So ecstatic dance, there are like some rules when it comes to ecstatic dance. Usually you dance barefoot, in silence. You cannot communicate verbally. You cannot use your phone, and there are no substances, alcohol whatsoever. So it's really you fully sober, present in the moment with yourself, with your body, And of course, you can connect with others, like vibing and dancing together, but not verbally. So it's really about being there and see what's happening inside of you and with others. And it's a lot of, about energy, and it's really liberating. But it's been a process that the first time I went, I was like, wow, what is this? This is crazy. Those people, I'm not sure if they're sober. And then over time, I was like, wow, no. That is like, it's really as when you see a child dancing, they're so free and they dance weirdly, and that's fine. It's like really letting go, whatever is there.
It sounds liberating.
It is.
Yeah?
Yes. And fun.
And fun.
Yeah.
But is it then long? Then you go in there and then it's two hours, an hour? What is it?
You go to a venue or an event of ecstatic dance. Usually the set lasts for 2 hours. And it's kind of a journey. So it usually starts very mellow, and then there's like a hype, and then it goes down, and then it's really like a journey for 2 hours. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, you've invited me. So when I'm ready, I will. I'm curious. I'm curious. It is interesting. It is, but I think the first time it will feel awkward, right?
Most probably.
Especially when, are there mirrors? Are you seeing yourself doing the thing?
No, you don't see yourself. Yeah, well, we only know when we experience.
It is. How do you balance? You mentioned also masculine. Is a part where does that come from, that masculine that comes from somewhere,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so usually I don't know if everyone is very aware of this mix of feminine and masculine energies. So usually the masculine energy is the doer, it's the one that takes action, and it's always in this mode of really rationality and planning and executing. And that comes half, I would say, in my case, half from society, because we live in a world where we are invited to perform,
mm-hmm.
to chase, to do, to achieve, to be successful, to make money, and to get more and more and more and more, like a more expensive car and buy a house, and a lot of expectations. And when you are working, especially in the corporate the corporate environment was made by men and for men. That's where the workforce was when it was created, right? So women would stay at home taking care of the kids and the house, and then guys would go out to work. And then slowly women entered this environment following the same rules. Mm-hmm. So we were, as women, were expected to behave the same in a way. So that's also the environment that I was for 15 years. And as a child also, when I see my father and my father has more, in a way, the feminine energy, being more like the caring one, the loving one, more sensitive, the one that cries, for example. And my mother would be more the critical, not praising, not sharing affection. So in my growing up, these kind of roles, they were mixed. Usually the mother is more like the feminine energy, the caring, the nurturing, and I lacked that. So I grew up with a lot of internal, in a way, in my household, and with this external influences of expectation of being a doer.
Mm. And how do you balance it now?
Now, well, I've been in my daily life. I really try to have moments of joy and pleasure. So when I mention about meditating, not being something super strict, and more like I do it throughout my routine or the day. So when I'm cycling or walking, I really try to be mindful of what's the surrounding, the senses, listening to the birds or watching nature. So those are. This is more like feminine energy, mm-hmm. being in the moment, flowing and appreciating and being grateful. I also, well, by doing ecstatic dance or dancing in general, cooking is also a good way to practice this nurturing, caring energy. Anything creative also, like even makeup or drawing or writing. Those are, yeah. So I really try to in a flowy way, incorporate some feminine energy.
Beautiful. And also, again, here is also being very aware of it is half of the work. Is half of the work, right?
Yes.
If you look back at your lived experience, what would you have loved to understand and being more aware of 15 years earlier?
Being more reflective on why I'm doing what I'm doing, especially in my case, career-wise. Also, maybe, which is connected to being more self-aware, doing more like personal development in the early stages, not waiting for when the pain is there to start making change. Because that led me to a very long journey of 10 years. So I wish I was more aware and reflective to be more aware of who I am and what is me and what it's from others. And allowing myself to slowly be more like me. And allow is a strong word for yes. in my journey. Yeah.
Allowing and acceptance.
Yeah.
Pool.
Yeah.
What does acceptance mean to you?
Accepting the shadows, so that those personality traits that are, I know that they can be not so well balanced sometimes, but also embracing my light. So being proud of the good things, the good personality, my strengths, and using that, exploring that more. And sometimes even voicing.
Mm. Voicing as in speaking up.
Yeah.
Mm. You mentioned also being a pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
That the challenge of being a pleaser, I often hear, is saying no.
Mm-hmm.
How is that for you?
It's also been the part of my journey
yeah.
in the last couple of years. Before, I would really give all my time for everyone, friends especially. I wouldn't say no. Like, I would go to anything, any place, help friends with their kids and with whatever it was needed. But then I would be exhausted and I wouldn't give myself time to rest, to do the things that give me pleasure. And I was always this giver. So now I do say no more often, even though, it's not easy. Because I also understand that sometimes, especially if it's a friend calling for help, if they're asking, it's because they need it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really need to be mindful, otherwise I'm just really helping everyone, and then who is helping me?
Yeah, that's true.
So finding this balance is the challenge, yeah.
It is. That's what my mantra, life mantra, became extreme self-care without being selfish.
Mm-hmm.
So extreme self-care without being selfish. Yeah. There's a sort of balance in it. And when you came in my home, in my house, I showed you the room where I love to be, especially when after an event and whatever, is the smallest room in the house, and it's called the progress room, and it's surrounded with books and with everything around, which makes me calm down and nurture my soul, right? And I think that's the most important thing, that we have to come back to ourselves also. There's a lot of distraction, a lot of noise. What is the change you would love to see in the world?
I would love to see people more hopeful that it is possible to live a life with joy and where satisfaction and making a living are balanced. So they don't need to either have one or the other.
Beautiful.
Mm.
What guides you?
What guides me is living a life worth living, and a life that when I'm in my 80s or 90s, or when I'm about to die, and there's this time-lapse video, movie from your life. And then I feel like, wow, I managed, I did well. I lived life with joy, but with balance and supporting the ones around me on the way. So really for me, it's like having this feeling that I really enjoyed each stage of my life. And yeah, with this balance of fun and responsibility.
Mm. Let's invite whoever you want to invite to our conversation, to reach out to you.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your message to them?
I like this phrase, which is really be the star of your own life show and not a guest in others. So be the agent of your life. And and let's elevate to the extraordinary and don't just accept ordinary.
Mm. Elevate is something in your program also, right?
It's also, yeah.
That's nice. Maybe that's interesting, since we're heading towards the end of our conversation, to align that elevate. What does it mean in your
mm-hmm.
program?
Mm-hmm. I believe that it is possible to create a life worth living. And usually we need to step up, like we need to elevate to the next step. That's part of the journey that I guide people. It's a 3-month mentorship program where they go from where they are right now in dissatisfaction to where they want to be and find this balance, this purpose, this alignment that we spoke about through this journey that follows 4 steps from finding your balance to really getting to know yourself on a deeper level, getting clear on the direction you want to move, and then the last step is having a plan, a roadmap to follow.
For our listeners, if this resonates, feel free to reach out to Lara. Lara, thank you very much for joining Journeys of Empowerment. I hope we touched upon many things. Is there something we missed out on that you think, Michiel, I would have loved to have said this or that?
I think we covered the main messages. I really appreciate your invitation, Michiel.
Yeah.
And I wish you and your listeners all the best and a meaningful, mindful journey ahead.
Thank you very much. And thank you for joining Journeys of Empowerment. Thank you for listening. If something in this conversation steered you, pass it on to someone who might need it. Because sometimes one story is all it takes. Keep going, keep listening to what matters, and keep being you. Oh, and before we close, a quick call to agency for all the men listening. On December 3rd in Amsterdam, we'll gather again for the next Women's Health at Work sessions, organized by Embrace Health, formerly known as Mama Moon Health. Even if you think women's health isn't your topic, you might have a mother, sister, colleague, or daughter who needs you to show up. The only way to really see what's happening is to be part of the conversation. Looking forward to see you there.